Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into another edition of the Bartholomew Town Podcast. It's Bill Bartholomew here with you for new episodes every Tuesday and Thursday. And of course, whenever breaking news happens. Today, welcoming back to the program, Corey Jones, this time in his capacity as a candidate for the Providence City Council. And there is so much to get into when we speak of Providence. And look, we know the saying, as the city of Providence goes, so goes the state of Rhode Island. I think that's totally true in practical terms, in terms of economics and in terms of, you know, just the mechanics of what will make the state move forward. But I also think it's true in terms of vibe. You know, I'm personally just so sick of hearing negative commentary surrounding the city. And as a resident of the city, and someone who works here as well and is proud of Providence, I think it's time that we start reframing some of the major issues and major challenges. And by the way, not to diminish them, but it's time to start reframing them as attainable goals, right? And as part of a vision that I think so many people have for what Providence can be and what the state of Rhode Island can be, while tapping into what Providence already has to offer. Does that make sense? It's kind of a roundabout way of saying that there's already a lot of great stuff happening in Providence. We need to tap into that and bolster what is good and at the same time start to pivot away from that which has been problematic for, in some cases, decades. So a great conversation with Corey, who was an executive director with the Black Lives Matter Political Action Committee, a member of the McKee administration as a policy advisor, and now bringing his perspective to a Providence Council race that features a number of younger voices challenging some incumbents in a number of different races. And we even talk about that, whether or not they're framing themselves as a unified voice, a slate, if you will, in this upcoming 2022 Providence City Council election. Lots going on in the pod these days. You've probably noticed, if you're a regular listener, we have a few recurring series that are kicking off. One is our Inside Rhode Island Cannabis series presented by Pura Vida Labs, Inside Rhode Island Public Health, where we're going to examine topics that are basically not COVID or the hospital merger. You know, there's a lot more to public health here in the state besides those two major issues. Again, not to dismiss them or diminish them, but that's happening. Inside Rhode Island Arts is another series that we're going to begin to launch on a regular basis. So that all in addition to the usual content that you receive here on B-Town. And for even more content, make sure you follow me on social media, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, LinkedIn. Just search for me, Bill Bartholomew. And as always, thanks to all of you for listening and supporting this show and building it to where it is today. It means a lot to me. There's some exciting announcements coming up as well with respect to where the podcast is going. Stay tuned for those. And for today, Corey Jones on Rhode Island's podcast of record, B-Town.
My name is Corey Jones, candidate for City Council Ward 3. I was a former executive director of the Black Lives Matter RI PAC, and I'm running to create a city where my brother can have a good and safe recovery, where my cousin can have a successful reentry into society, and where I can raise a family and they have, you know, they thrive and have a good education. And happy to be here with you, Bill. This is my second time. Last time is when, you know, we first started the pack. And so excited to, you know, continue to, you know, be on the show.
Absolutely. So look, Providence is in a pivotal moment right now. And there's really like two different ways that people assess this. There's a tendency for people who don't live in the city to look at things through one lens and sort of say, oh, well, I always use the expression that people think like somebody's going to jump out from behind a dumpster and like mug them or like break into their car or something like that. Or like, you know, you've got people who make it seem like, you know, anything south of downtown is like a war zone. Obviously, that's not all true. Yet at the same time, there are serious challenges. Most of them are systemic. Some of them are just by choice or design. But we have so many issues here on a baseline level. And I think the one that jumps out to everybody that we can all agree on, no matter where you stand in the region, is the education situation. We're in the midst of the turnaround. We've heard Commissioner Infante Green say that this turnaround process, the state takeover, is going to be extended until later in the decade. So just out of the gate, your take on education, should the city have control of the school system again? And as a counselor, what would your first steps be towards improving education in the city?
Yeah, so I think the city should have control again. I think, you know, in my opinion, stems from when you look across the nation, school takeovers have not been very successful. And, you know, there's a state takeover book by Domingo something, but he's actually from Providence. And so, you know, I think that what we need to do is we need to have an elected school board. My first steps and as city councilor would be pushing for more translation technology. So I was a substitute teacher at Alvarez High School, where over 90% of our students spoke a different language. English was their second language. And we had hard times even communicating with the kids to go to the bathroom or not. And so we have to be able to get over these language barriers. We have to bring in more multilingual instructors, which can be parents and can, you know, also, you know, bolster the economy while also pushing our community inside of our school and, you know, allowing the folks who are have the most skin in the game to be able to be part of the healing in the process of making our schools better.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's such a great point. That is, you know, it's mentioned, but it's not brought to the top of the pile, and it's so critical. I mean, I'm over here. I live by Alvarez, and you know, I certainly understand that perspective, and it's critical. You know, you look at New York City. I just heard Mayor Adams. He's pleading with the State Board of Regents to retain control of the schools because he's so happy with what's happening with New York City running its own schools. I think that hyper-localized approach is something that's missing. At the same time, people are going to say, well, wait a minute, you've got decades of issues. Some people would blame the union. Some people would say it's just more in a leadership side. I guess number one, getting a superintendent in place, there's that. But what's your take? I guess what's your message to Providence teachers? Because there are amazing teachers in this district. But if you talk to anybody inside the schools, there's also people who are not necessarily giving it 100%.
Yeah, that's a good question. So, you know, being that I was a substitute teacher, I think I saw firsthand what the challenges are. So my message to the teachers is that I'm on your side. And, you know, I will continue to make it clear that this the population that we work with is, you know, has some of the biggest challenges, you know, in the nation. And we have to create a plan that is tailored made to address those unique challenges. And that's what has not been done. We've been, you know, using these cookie cutter approaches to deal with a problem that is very unique. And, you know, I think that the teachers, you know, already don't have enough resources and have been demoralized. I think things are getting better. I think, you know, it's clear that to leaders that if we don't continue to show teachers appreciation, then we won't be able to retain them. I support the bonuses and the retention efforts. So I think that that has been something successful in the school takeover. But I do believe that, you know, our teachers need more resources and we need to address these unique challenges with unique approaches. And that's why I, you know, specifically talked about the language barrier, right? And also, you know, you touched a little bit on violence and crime. And, you know, I think we need to work to make our schools a safer environment as well. You can't just throw, you know, a couple SROs into the school and expect the environment to become safe. We have to, you know, truly create diversion programs, you know, create, you know, nonviolence training and make sure that these are adequately and consistently funded throughout our schools. And, you know, we have to work to make our schools a safe environment and bolster our school culture. And so there's a lot of work to be done. That's, you know, going to take teachers, principals, administrators, state leaders and city leaders. But I don't believe that we should be, you know, pointing the finger at anyone specifically. I think that, you know, this is something that we're all going to have to come together and put our minds together and fix.
Where do you stand on SROs?
Yeah, so I think that SROs should be phased out. But I think what a lot of people miss is that the teachers and the principals and administrators have to be bought in, as well as the students. They have to be completely bought in and organized for those efforts to work. You can't take SROs out of schools if the principal and the teachers feel like that's their main line of safety. And so I'm for creating these new systems and putting counselors in schools. But I think we have to, you know, approach it in a situation of, you know, how do we create buy-in? How do we organize students? How do we, you know, create this better system? And then let's have discussions about what the phase out will look like.
Yeah, that's a mature approach to it. Absolutely. Because the notion of just pull the plug tomorrow morning or something like right. that, while on an advocacy side, it makes sense on a practical side. Mm-hmm. Just one of those things that there's a lot of dependency on that system that yes. you don't want to, it's like Jenga blocks, you know, you pull it out, all of a sudden the thing collapses.
Right. And I think the teacher union made a really good statement around that, around removing SROs. They, you know, acknowledged that these systems cannot continue to exist, but we do acknowledge that, you know, it's not as easy as, you know, it's said to be, you know. So from my internal experience of working on the inside, I've seen that these principals, I'm pretty sure that every single principal who has SRO supports keeping SROs. And so, you know, until we have buy-in from that principal and have a plan that he feels safe or she feels safe, we can't, you know, just immediately remove these SROs.
There's been an issue over the last few months. At times, it's gotten almost silly the way it's been portrayed, but it's a serious issue, and that is the employee vaccine mandate, particularly how it affects police departments. The policy was put into place. There was a lot of pushback from Mike Amonde and the Providence Police Union. We also saw John Igliozzi, Providence City Council President, get involved and sort of be, you know, an advocate for the police that they ought not to be required to be vaccinated. This went back and forth for a little while. We're taping on, I don't know what day, March 9th. Last week, it was announced, I think it was actually earlier this week, that it was announced that that vaccine mandate was going to be, was not going to be enforced. There'll be a testing element instead. You know, we haven't seen a lot of victory parading. You know, we had Mike Amonde on the radio show, on the Dan York show, and pardon me, we had John Igliozzi on the radio show, and you know, he made it seem like, look, this was a victory, but at the same time, it's people aren't cheering. It's sort of just quietly going away. Where do you stand on that particular issue? Are you satisfied with where this is at?
No, I'm not. And, you know, I think it started off as political theater, you know, on Igliozzi's behalf. And I was very disappointed with it. But I think, you know, and I'm not happy that the mayor has reversed the mandate. I was happy to see that he was standing strong on it, you know, and I'm happy to see that he got a lot of progress. But I still don't think you can make an exception at the last minute. I think, you know, when the police's motto is to protect and serve, that means health. You know, they have to protect us from catching this virus as well. You can't, you know, catch a burglar in our home and then give everybody COVID and then your grandmother dies, or someone who, you know, has you know, a developmental disability or some type of vulnerability dies because of the ignorance of a police officer. And so, you know, I think, you know, we should have stood strong on that. And, you know, I think that we cannot operate in a way where we allow the police to be above what their motto is, which is protecting and serving.
Yeah. And then there's also the other side of it, too. We heard from a woman on the radio that says that she was an employee at City Hall for 30 years. actually 34 years. She was close to retirement. She didn't want to get the vaccine. And as such, she left her job. She was depressed about that. And she did so knowing that, look, I've got a choice to make. I don't feel comfortable getting the vaccine. Perhaps it was a medical or religious issue, whatever it is. At least she made the decision to not to accept the rule, accept the consequences. Right. Now, all of a sudden, they're saying, "Ah, never mind." And she's out of a job. So it's just it just seems like a mess. And I'm not sure how it got to this point. It doesn't, you know, it seems like just pick a direction and go with it. You know, I'm in favor of the vaccine mandate myself. I can't imagine why anyone wouldn't at this point go for it. But it's just flimsy. There's no question about it.
Yeah, it's like, you know, there's rules and they have to be followed. And if our police aren't following those rules, then, you know, how do they expect anyone else to? It really is another extension of legal cynicism, right? Legal cynicism says that, you know, if people don't believe that these systems will protect them, then they're going to take it into their own hands. And if they don't believe that our police are living up to their own laws, and are following the laws and regulations and rules, then why should they? And so we have to combat that, and we have to all, you know, be held to a higher standard as city employees, as, you know, city councilors, as police officers. And if our police can't even hold themselves to that standard, then, you know, they're really creating a perception in the community that, you know, folks don't have to follow rules, right?
Support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/BartholomewTown or clicking the support link wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to reach tens of thousands of Rhode Islanders per month? Whether you're a small business, an organization, a political candidate, send me an email, bill@ripodcast.com, and I'll be happy to discuss some of the sponsorship packages that I offer, where you can reach listeners through podcasting, radio, social media, and even more. bill@ripodcast.com.
Now back to B-Town.
There's so much we could get into, you know, a few quick ones. The pension issue in Providence is something that has been, it's a major issue. You know, I don't know that the pension system is about to collapse or anything like that. It's tough to say. I'm not really a financial analyst. Some people have told me that it's an extremely dangerous moment. Others have said, others that are, that I respect their opinion on this stuff, have said, it's a little bit of an exaggeration. And, you know, we're seeing, again, political theater with a special election that's going to take place around it and everything. Where do you stand on that? And as counselor, what would you do to ensure the pension system was solvent and properly dispersed?
Yeah, so I've heard folks say that, you know, long as we're solvent, it's not as dire as folks have made it up to be. But I do think that, you know, if we don't solve this problem now, it's going to stranglehold us from doing extra spending and from making all these good things that a group of us, you know, are calling for in this new city council. And so I believe that, you know, the biggest barrier with the pension system has been the city and the state don't have the type of relationships that are necessary to get big things like this done. So I worked at the state house for 11 months and I didn't see, you know, and no offense to my, you know, future colleagues, but I didn't see one city councilor or the mayor in the state house at one time, you know? And so building these relationships is going to be essential when you want something big to be passed. And you can't just come around once you have, you know, a big proposal. You have to build those relationships before, be involved and be advocating for things that support, you know, that support the city at the state level. And so, you know, I think that that is the biggest, you know, issue and challenge in passing this. Mello. One second. Mello.
The dogs of Bartholomew Town. Someday I'm going to put a compilation together of.
I'll bring them with me.
Nice.
So, you know, I hope that the current proposal passes. I am a little wary that by time, you know, it gets approved, that interest rates may go up. But I do think that, you know, our next city council needs to build these relationships ahead of time. And they need to be ready to advocate, you know, for stuff like increased funding through pilot. They need to be ready to advocate for a pension proposal that is going to help Providence and the rest of the state, because as Providence goes, the rest of the state goes. And so if we're not able to get a grip on that, then the whole state is going to be in a dire situation rather than Providence approaching one.
No question about it. I mean, we saw some of this miscommunication or lack thereof with the whole South Water Street bike lane. I mean, what a fiasco that was. What an embarrassing situation. Just the back and forth on that. And, you know,
even the state police stuff with, you know, the increased crime. Yeah. I don't think we need state police, but I do think that there's a lot of programs at the state level that we can make available to our first responders at the city level that could decrease crime. For instance, the Real Jobs RI program. If we can, you know, get high paying jobs and workforce development training for folks that are, you know, possibly predisposed to crime, involved in crime, connected to crime, we can significantly reduce crime at, you know, zero effect to the city's budget, right? And so we have to work with our state leaders to be able to come up with plans that's going to help Providence and the state. And we can't be, you know, going back and forth, doing, you know, political dances and, you know, more political theater. We have to actually work together or we're going to fail together.
Yes. Also true. I couldn't agree more. That collaboration, that's something that is so important. Last couple of minutes, I guess. Well, you know, you mentioned you worked at the State House. I guess expand on that. I'm just curious what that was like. What's your takeaway from being there and the McKee administration and kind of where things are right now in terms of, just vibe, which is something that you can offer a unique perspective on having been inside the building.
Absolutely. So I think, you know, it was really interesting because, I think the archaic institutions that have existed for so long make things very complex and complicated. Yep. And, you know, it takes a certain type of personality or skills to navigate in that system. And I think that, you know, I found that I was pretty good at navigating through it. I found myself working with folks I would never have imagined, you know, me working with. I actually championed a lot of my proposals with former town administrator or town manager from Lincoln, Joe Ullman, right? A Republican.
Yep.
And so, you know, I want to talk about some of the things I got done. I was able to work with the AG's office and with the legislator to, you know, push statewide body cameras on police. That was a assignment I was assigned to. I was also part of the harm reduction center's regulations. I represented our office and brought back information and also, you know, was very vocal on, you know, making sure that however we write these regulations that, you know, with equity in mind, meaning we can't just write these regulations for, you know, heroin and opiate uses. We have to also write it for inhalation and crack use, right? Drugs that affect disproportionately communities of color. I worked really, you know, I championed the crisis intervention training in the budget for all 39 cities and towns, police departments, which is something that, you know, the cities and towns, police departments and cities want. They want this crisis intervention training. And so we worked really closely with those cities and towns, as well as Thunder Mist, to make that happen. I worked, you know, really closely with someone in our office named Victoria Scott on the tech updates and Wi-Fi for ACI. Making sure that we're able to have, curriculums of education and training and certification in our ACI. And, you know, when COVID hit, everything was paper before, but, you know, folks weren't able to complete their program because we weren't able to use paper anymore. And so that's going to be huge for the ACI. I worked really closely with Tori again on mental health courts pilot program, which would divert folks from the conventional, you know, harsher system to a mental health court system. And I also worked on with the legislators and the Coalition Against Gun Violence on banning straw purchases of guns in schools. So, you know, it wasn't easy. Some days I would be asking folks, schedulers, When are they going to a meeting and when are they leaving? I would sit by their door. I would walk them to their next meeting just to get 5 seconds with them. You know, it felt like I was almost, you know, doing everything possible and getting really uncomfortable in order to make things happen.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't easy, but I felt that, you know, there was a lot of victories that we got. And I hope that I can continue to work with the administration to continue to give victories. I believe that, you know, at the city level, we need to have that type of leverage to work with our executive branch, our legislators, to make things happen. Couple more things. We got Coverall Kids on the budget, and we got $10 million for minority small businesses, all something I advocated very heavily for.
Last quick question. It's there's a wave of new and young candidates for city council this year. Sometimes I get press releases or I don't even know how to describe them. I get communication as a group, if you will. You're not the Rhode Island Political Cooperative. You're not doing anything necessarily formally, but would you say that there's an alliance of young candidates that's kind of working together to try to, you know, do something like what we saw with the cooperative?
Absolutely. I would say it's informal, but we definitely, you know, are working together as future prospective counselors to have a plan to get to work on day one.
Rhode Island's podcast of record, B-Town. At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.